Blog Talk Radio.
This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The biggest party in NASCAR returns May 5th through 7th for the Geico 500. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.
Hey folks, Timothy Peters, driver of the number 17 Red Horse Racing Toyota Tundra. You're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain.
Live from Talladega, you're in The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and your Apple Podcast.
Live from Dega Nation, I'm Tim DeSpain, alongside my good friend, SpeedwayDigest.com, up in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Stephen, how you doing today, bud?
Well, it's actually warmed up. We're getting some 80-degree days up here for multiple days in a row.
I know it, man. Suzanne was on the back porch a while ago. She said, it's a little warm. I said, it ain't warm, it's hot. That's the way we say it in Alabama, hot, Stephen, hot. Stephen, let me go ahead and bring Reverend Joe on.
It's not hot yet. I mean, this is nice, comfortable temperature. I mean, if you want hot, wait a few more months. And, I mean, you're a little farther south than I am. And you know hot in Alabama, and we know hot and muggy up here in Virginia.
Yeah, just like we say it down here. Y'all probably say it up there, too. It ain't the heat. It's the humidity.
Yeah, you can't walk out the house without having, a shirt soaked in sweat in about 30 seconds flat and having to wring that thing out.
Exactly. Steve, let's go ahead and bring Reverend Joe on and get the invocation going. Our good friend from OnTrackWithJesus.com, Mr. Reverend Joe. Reverend, how you doing tonight, bud?
Doing okay. How are you guys doing? You sound like you're complaining about the weather again, which is why God does nothing about the weather, because no matter what it is, somebody complains about it.
You got that right. We can never be satisfied, can we, Reverend?
Well, not so long ago you were complaining how cold it was. So make up your mind. What's going on with everybody else?
Nothing much. Stephen was, just like you said, complaining about the weather. We got a big show tonight. We've got Sean Merriman coming on, NFL legend. Stephen's got with him. He's going to start some type of little racing team there. And we've got Vice President of Marketing and Communications from Richmond National Raceway, Mr. Mike Waldale. So we got a pretty big show.
Well, we had a pretty exciting weekend at California Speedway. Let's get the prayer started.
Yes, sir.
Lord, we come before you and we thank you for another great weekend of racing, for another great week in this great country of ours where we could enjoy life without having to spend our time ducking and covering and hiding because of the great soldiers and great men and women who serve our country and our neighborhoods. We thank you for all those that are in uniform of any kind who put themselves in harm's way to protect us. We ask you to bless everyone involved in auto racing, be with all the people all the way around it, all our fans, and everyone who loves this sport like we do. And we thank you for the fact that you sent your son to die for our sins so we'd have a way to make it to heaven. We thank you for all that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Joe.
Woo! Woo!
Joe, great invocation. And you and Miss Betty, was that Auto Club Speedway this weekend where Kyle Larson swept the weekend? He won the Service King 300 in the NASCAR Xfinity Series and also won the Auto Club 400 in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series.
He was on fire. He just was primed and ready, and there was no denying him. The man was just on fire. Everything he did just fell in the line the way it needed to. And he's been knocking on the door for the last 3 years, so it's not shocking. He's a heck of a race car driver, always has been, and sprint cars and other things. So, I mean, it was just doing. The thing I loved about him is he kept saying, I don't mind finishing second every week as long as there's somebody different in front of me. That way he kept scoring match points, which he did a fine job of and closed it out this weekend.
Yeah, you got a good point there, and also his teammate Jamie McMurray. He's been running good. So Chip Ganassi, they look like they might have found something this year, River.
Yeah, had a short conversation with Chip as he was going out to Victory Lane after the Xfinity race, and he's beaming, and he said they've been working hard, and looks to me like it's paying off.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it's paying off. Reverend Joe, I want to thank you for coming on. I'm going to throw you over to Stephen Wilson. I know Stephen's got a few questions.
Sure.
I know you've been going out to California for at least the last couple of years, but I just want to get your thoughts on, I didn't really get to sit and watch much of the Xfinity Series race. I kind of caught a lot of the highlights on that. But when you compare the Xfinity Series race to the Monster Energy race, one of the big things that stands out is that there was a comparatively more passing in that race, and especially more side-by-side racing in the Xfinity Series race than there really was in the Monster Energy race. It was more spread out in the Monster Energy Series throughout the majority of the race. And, you know, while there was a lot of green flag runs, I'm a proponent for really just letting the race play out in any way means. And, I don't care if it's, a lot of cautions or a lot of green flag laps. That really doesn't necessarily concern me too much. What I think is, we've seen the track itself over, the last 5 to 10 years really change to a point where racing is inherently different at Auto Club Speedway. So when you see both of those races out there, and in your perspective from being there, what was kind of your overall thoughts between the two events? Because, catching the highlights between the two events, it just seemed like the Xfinity Series cars and the Xfinity Series race in that shorter race, there was an abundant amount of passing, especially side-by-side racing that was taking place that wasn't taking place in the Monster Energy Series race.
You know, I've been going to California Speedway since it opened. I haven't missed one NASCAR event there. And the thing that impresses me, well, first of all, the track is worn, which actually makes for better racing. But with a smaller spoiler and such, I think the difference, we were talking about it, me and Betty was discussing it over the weekend, and I spoke with a few others about it. I think what's happening is, first of all, in the Xfinity Series, you have young people who are trying to make a name for themselves. You've got some older folks who, unfortunately, don't have rides in the Monster Energy Series, so they enjoy their racing and go out there to have a good time every weekend and try to pick up sponsors and such so they can run stronger and further to the front and such. But I think the biggest difference is the cup drivers that are in the race. First of all, in talking with the non-cup drivers, they all tell me, you know, the cup drivers drive them to a higher level. But also, the cup drivers, to some degree, don't have anything to lose. And by that I mean, they're not worried about, I'm not going to get the championship if I mess up or crash here in the Xfinity Series, because I'm not running for the Xfinity Series championship. No, they don't want to wreck their car owner's equipment, but they race a lot harder because the Xfinity drivers are challenging them. They're challenging the Xfinity drivers, but they also don't have as much to lose as in, gee whiz, if I get tangled on lap 27, I'm going to have a terrible finish and my points for the year are going to be affected. Well, when you get over to the Monster Energy Series, it's a longer race, and they tend to get a little bit spread out in the middle and continue to run single file, don't make too many bold moves until it comes down to the end. I do think that these stages that they've set up now help. I notice as you get closer to the stage, the end of the stage, more interesting things happen. Pit stops get more critical. It's like having four races in one. As one longtime writer said to me this weekend, he said, we've got three heat races and a main event. And if you think about it, that's kind of what it looks like. It looks like old-fashioned Saturday night racing. It gets real serious every time we get down to 10 or 15 laps to the end of the stage. And you know, business picks up. And I thought it was rather interesting the last few weeks that when we got into those to the final stage, the number of cars that were staying out, the number of cars that were putting on more tires, we were standing by Chase Elliott's pit on Sunday. And they came in and changed tires like four times in 10 laps. They weren't putting on new ones. They did have new ones in one of those stops, and I don't remember which one it was, but they were going over the tires they had sitting there and which were the best. And because they were at the back of the lead lap cars, these guys were coming in taking all kinds of risks. And that was something that wasn't shown as much on TV, from what I could tell, as in the Xfinity race being a shorter race, not a lot shorter, but being shorter, seemed to be less focus on it, but it was happening up and down pit road when we got down toward the end of the race and when we got to the end of stages. I think NASCAR has wanted for years to make the whole race more interesting, and they're hitting on something right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, essentially what, you know, NASCAR, the drivers' council and everybody, the track partners, TV partners, everybody kind of came and put their heads together on the stage-based racing is to not only each of these drivers, you know, we've continued to say over the years, you know, these drivers need to be rewarded for their efforts and what they're doing throughout the race, or at some point in the race, they need to be rewarded. You know, at one time, you know, we used to give away, you know, all kinds of things like halfway money. We used to do all kinds of things, you know, halfway trophies, halfway money. You know, you think about it, we used to do all kinds of things in the past, and a lot of those things went away for a good long time. And, you know, we've gone through the stage-based system. And I think you look back at the Phoenix last week or the week prior where Ryan Newman and the top two cars stayed out and everybody else came in and took tires. And that really, you know, was to the benefit of Ryan Newman. And, you know, he really held off a charge by Carl Larson, who finished second in that race to him. You know, it's an ever-changing target or an ever-changing strategy target for these drivers trying to figure out, you know, these notebooks aren't necessarily, you know, working like they did in previous years. So I think it's really changing the way that these teams are having to think and go and approach these stages. And, you know, we are seeing that at the ends of the stages where, you know, you're right, the 10, 15 or so laps before the end, you know, business is picking up. Drivers are racing harder because the top 10 are getting points that carry over not only, you know, at the end of the race. There's other benefits that come along with this on top of their yearly points. So, I mean, you know, if you win the stage, that's also points that go into your, you know, your playoff points. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into this. But I think at the same time is that, you know, we haven't solved 100% of the problem yet. And, you know, I hope we are on our way to doing so. And one of the things that, you know, I've continued to suggest is that, you know, I'm glad that California, the race is now 400 miles out there because 500 miles is just, you know, just too long for a track like that. You know, there's other tracks that, you know, we need to get to on our schedule where, you know, are at the same length. You know, our fans, everybody that's out there, you know, the instantaneous gratification of social media has changed the complexity and changed the landscape out there where, you know, running 400 and 500 mile weekend races every single week, 36, 38 weeks a year, just isn't cutting it anymore. And even with these stage-based systems, you know, I've been looking at some of the times over the last year. I mean, we really haven't cut down and gotten to the core of the problem where, you know, people are just, or even in the NFL or Major League Baseball and your traditional stick and ball sports are just not sitting down and watching your 3-hour events anymore. And I mean, you know, NASCAR is very well aware of this. They've said so. They understand the complexity of this problem. And I think that we need to get to a point where, you know, these events are much shorter. And, you know, where the cutoff is at some of these events, because I knew at Auto Club Speedway, whether it's a 400-mile event, and the day prior, it's only a 300-mile event. I mean, how much more can you cut these races down at some respects? And, but, you know, on the flip side of this coin is that does Texas Motor Speedway, and no disrespect to them, do they need 500-mile, two 500-mile races anymore? I would venture to say no, just based on, you know, you look at the ticket sales and the dwindling television ratings, you know, not only going into their weekend. So I think, you know, you have to look at the complexity of the problem as a whole. You know, the stage-based systems are one step in making this work, in making solving the problem. I think we just have to also continue tweaking this down to also bring this full circle at the same time and looking at some of the other aspects of the sport.
You're right, Stephen, but I think that the amount of money that's involved and the kind of money they've got to pull from a sponsor and the kind of money they charge people for tickets to make a place race. I mean, you look at California Speedway, there's basically only two big events a year there anymore. The NASCAR weekend, and then you've got the IndyCar race. There's some other things go on there, but to keep a facility like that, you've got to have money, and there's got to be money coming in. I don't know what the total solution is. I do know that when I ran modifieds in the Northeast, we would have races that were 200 laps, but we'd have a break at 50, and the person who was leading at 50 got a trophy and some prize money, like you mentioned. We had some crazy things we did back then. The problem these days is everything's got to be in stone before anybody shows up to the racetrack. I can remember we had races up in Thompson Speedway We had a race one week that was an unbelievable race. It was, we always had 50 cars in our main events, and we had 100 and some odd cars show up every week. But one of the races that I really enjoyed was it paid $1,000 to win, $500 for fifth, $500 for 10th, $500 for 15th, and if I remember right, $500 for 20th, which was a heck of a breakdown, and it was comical because when we came to the start-finish line for the checkered flag, there were guys who made surges forward, guys who dropped back, and the guys who really knew what they were doing ended up in those spots anyway because they were running, for instance, 10th, and the guy in fourth in the 11th passed them, but the guy in 9th dropped back to try to be there, and the guy ended up staying where he was. It made things really exciting. I think the stage racing is doing something similar, but I think if you want to keep going with this length of races, you need to have there be a stages need to be every 100 miles or 100 whatever it is. If it's Martinsville Speedway and it's 400 laps, then there should be a stage at the end of every 100 laps. So it was equal lengths all the way throughout, which would keep it more interesting.
Yeah, I think that is one of the confusing things out there is that every single week there is a differentiating factor into the way that these races are run. And then most people are trying to understand that, you know, somewhere around the 25 and somewhere around the 50% mark, it's, you know, not exact, but they know somewhere around 25% and somewhere around 50% of the race each and every week. That's the end of the stages, and they know about 50% is the last stage in the race, give or take a few percentages here or there. So that really makes some really odd numbers here and there for some weeks when you go back and look at the numbers. So it's like when people are looking at it and they're thinking, oh, there's only 48 this week in stage one and 48 in this one, and then, you know, we've got 160 in the final. So it really just kind of makes some weird numbers, and you're right. I think if it were to break down in an easier number, as you say, we go to Martinsville this week, there's 500 laps. You know, if we break it off into four stages, say 125 laps in each stage, that's 500 laps. It makes it easier for somebody to look at the number and they know, okay, 125 laps, 125 laps, 125 laps, and 500 laps, I'm done, we're out of here. You know, that makes it easier for some of these, you know, not only the teams, because it gives them an easier way to manage, but the other thing I think that NASCAR has really done in the stage-based systems is that they've looked at and worked with Goodyear, as my understanding is, to make sure that the tires and fuel runoffs are just past each of the first stage so that nobody can make it to the first stage without having to at least pit one time. So,
well, if you remember,
you know, that
a few years
ago,
Stephen, a few years ago, NASCAR went to smaller fuel cells to try to break the field up and more pit stops. Well, that kind of worked the opposite of the way they intended. So now, like you said, it's time to do something more to synchronize these stages. But I think it's going to take this whole season before they get a handle on it. And I think fans, real NASCAR fans, will work with it. And I think the newbies coming in to see what it's all about might find it confusing. Because when you go to a baseball game, you've got X number of innings. When you go to a football game, you've got four quarters. If we're going to copy other sports with our so-called playoffs, then we need to copy that whole idea also.
Yeah, you know, it really just also goes back to, you know, Steve O'Donnell, Jim Cassidy, a lot of the people that work over at NASCAR at the same time, you know, in the first couple of races of the season where they just said, you know, it's kind of really just, you know, to paraphrase them, not really to, you know, be exact. They said, you know, it's kind of a little bit unacceptable on our part that we're taking so long to get these next race stages set up. And, you know, if we've noticed, you know, we're not using 10, 15 laps now anymore to get these stages set up. I think that, you know, NASCAR is working in some way to get these stages lined back up, get the pits done, do what they say that they're going to do with, you know, allowing in-race stage winners to be, you know, interviewed on television, whatever the case may be, get the pit stops done and get them back racing. And they've cut down some of that, and I think that we are working into, you know, getting those kinks and bugs worked out. You know, there is a little bit more to go, and NASCAR is working on that. So, you know, with every new change, you know, there's always going to be things out there that we're going to have to, you know, learn. They're learning. We're all learning. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, something has to be done. NASCAR isn't the only sport out there that's losing, you know, fans sitting in the stands. They're not the only sport out there that's losing ratings on TV. Every sport right now is kind of in that same, you know, that same problem. And to combat it, I think it would really be beneficial not only for NASCAR to try and go out there and make changes on their own, but I think it would be beneficial for them to go to all of these professional sports and maybe all of them put their heads together and say, what can we do together as major league sports to, you know, get fans re-energized, get them back in the seats, and get them back watching TV again, even though that we compete against one another at some level. And even though that we're competing for the same ratings, the same dollar amounts for, you know, entertainment, et cetera, I think we can work together in some aspects to figure out the problem as a whole. Because they're all having the same problem.
I think you're right, Stephen, and I think NASCAR is going in the right direction. They're at least doing everything they can think of and meeting with the drivers and the car owners, and we're figuring all these things out, which I think is going to help us all. But I also believe that, like you said, I think all sports need to stop competing with each other, the major sports that are televised and such, and start working together. You know, we managed to do it in the realm of the Olympics, and I'm not saying we need to go that far, but what I mean is, we know when everybody's schedules are so that we don't put big events on top of each other, but there's nothing wrong with having a NASCAR event on Sunday after you've had a major football game in the same town on Saturday and such, so that people can go to multiple venues. There again, the price of the ticket's going to have to be adjusted some so people can afford it. I mean, we still have an awful lot of fans in NASCAR who save up for a year, sometimes even 2 years, to make a big NASCAR event their family vacation. And we need to keep that excitement so that they keep doing that, because every fan can't go to every race. And even here on the West Coast Swing, they're not far apart, but it still isn't cheap to even travel between the venues, hotels, and all the rest of it, much less the money it costs to get into the track and so on. So somewhere along the line, more cooperation has to happen. NASCAR is doing a pretty good job of it. We had decent fields at all three tracks this year. I think, honestly, that they need to shuffle the dates around a little bit. We need to have all three of them within 3 weeks of each other, but maybe start to move around where we start. I know it's about money, and Vegas is a wonderful place to start. I love going there. It's great speedway, great racing, great people. It's the same at California Speedway. Phoenix has great people there, great racing. They're making changes to the track. But I think some people's vacations, school schedules and so on shift. So thus, you know, people aren't going to be able to get to all three unless we move them around so they get a chance to see what it's like at each track.
Yeah, hopefully some of these ideas will come when this five-year agreement is up and we start taking a look at this. I mean, we've got until 2020 to really look at hopefully a realignment at some point into this. And this will be an opportunity for, you know, NASCAR to look at some of these ideas. But in the meantime, I think it really, you know, the cooperation piece, and really, you know, when we start talking about the ticketing, the hotels, the traveling, the everything else that comes along into it, you know, these are things that, you know, all sports face at the same time that their fans face. And I think the cooperation between all of them can really be beneficial if all of them do work together. And, you know, for them as a professional, you know, professionals, you know, sporting series that are competing against one another, not only for ticketing dollars, but, you know, entertainment dollars and, you know, hotel and everything else. I think it's really, you know, something that they'll be able to go out there and work with that cooperation with.
I think you're 100% right, and I think they're going in the right direction. I think the racing this year has been more exciting, though I agree there's been some dry spots during the course of a race. But, you know, the decisions, I mean, look at the last 2 weeks. The crew chief decisions at the very end, what made them zeros or heroes? I mean, it was with Ryan Newman wanted four new tires like every driver does, and his crew chief made the dangerous decision of saying, nope, stay out there on what you got. Had a great driver who pushed it to the limit and managed to pull it off. If Ryan hadn't been able to pull it off, Ryan wouldn't have looked like the loser. It would have been his crew chief. You know, same thing this weekend with the 42 team. You know, these teams, people are starting to realize, I think, more and more, and the stage is bringing out even more so, that the team, a whole team, is what's involved in making this happen. Because it's not just the driver. The driver does the whole job on a Saturday night race that's 30 laps or maybe 40 laps, as long as the setup comes out right. Then the driver has to make it work. But when you've got multiple pit stops, you've got the opportunity to adjust it. And, you know, we want to see that kind of good racing. Also wanted to mention kudos out to David Gilliland Racing, with the Napa team, with Todd Gilliland winning both 100 lappers at Irwindale Speedway on Saturday night. So I heard people say the biggest problem they had with it was Todd ran away with both shows. So there's always that balancing act of remembering that we're putting on a show. And that's critical. And I think that's what you're noticing in the Xfinity Series is the more experienced drivers have more time to put on a show, more so than sweating, winning a race. Yes, they want to win the race, but they're remembering they need to put on a show in order to get noticed.
Yeah, most definitely. So I think Tim's back on here with us, and we're going to go ahead and roll back over here into, I think Sean Merriman is on here along with us tonight with the K&N Series team owner. And if, Joe, if you'd like to stay on along with us, feel free, but I'm going to hand this back over here to Tim real quick.
Okay, thanks, Reverend. Yeah, Steve, let's go ahead and bring on
three-time
Pro Bowl and All-Pro selection, NFL powerhouse, Mr. Sean Merriam.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Sean, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, too. Thank you very much for taking time out to come on. We really do appreciate it with Stephen and I. What makes you want to go NASCAR racing, bud?
You know, I actually started being a fan of NASCAR. I got my opportunity to come to the 2008 Sprint Cup Series in Fontana. I was invited out to be the Grand Marshal of that race, honorary Grand Marshal. And from that point on, I was just hooked. You know, I spent a lot of time that day with Jimmy Johnson and his team. treating me very well, and I was hooked. You know, I never knew the excitement of NASCAR until I actually went to a race. I think that changed my entire perspective on the sport. You know, I think it you know, I grew up a fan of Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon, and I watched it on TV for many years, but I never had the opportunity to come to a race, and my first time at the race was that year in 2008, and I loved it.
Awesome. It's really something to see, Sean. I know it is something to see. You need to come down here to Talladega, too. You can see a lot here at Talladega also, Sean.
That's my next stop. They just telling me, you know, it only keeps getting better, and I was a little upset. I missed Daytona. I was actually shooting something that weekend for football in the draft and doing some broadcasting there for the NFL season coming up. But I was so upset. I missed Daytona because that's my next stop, and then Talladega as well.
Awesome. Sean, maybe I'll run up on you. I know your time is limited, and thanks again for taking time to come out on the show. We really appreciate what you do for the sport now and what you've done for the great sport of NFL and your absolute great career there. We appreciate it, Sean.
Thank you, and I appreciate it being a part of the sport. And, you know, I keep on pushing people and telling everybody, I say, look, you know, if you haven't been to a NASCAR race before, make sure you get there. It's one of the most exciting things you'll ever be a part of.
Awesome, man. I'm going to throw you over to Stephen Wilson's Speedway Digest, Sean.
You got it.
Sean, thanks a lot. Appreciate you taking time to come on here tonight. You've connected up with Jesse, who's been in the K&N series, and he's been part of the diversity program that NASCAR has bought on for the last couple of years. His career hit, but not only that, he's part of the Navy Reserves that he's been part of in fighting for our country out there. Just talk to us a little bit about how you got involved with Jesse and how you guys really connected together to get a part of this K&N Pro Series and start a team together.
Well, the first time I met Jesse was several months ago. I had an event downtown Los Angeles for my company Lights Out. It's a big fashion event. And I got an opportunity to meet Jesse, and we got a chance to talk about him being a former football player and active in the military. And, oh, by the way, I raced NASCAR in the K&N series. So I asked him, I said, man, when were you going to drop that nothing on me? At the end, that's a big deal. Obviously, I have a clothing line, lifestyle brand, that's athletic men's and women's T-shirts. And we were just thinking about the synergy. The very next week, he drove up from Monterey, California, all the way to downtown Los Angeles to my office. And we sat there for hours and just talked everything. And we just both explained the excitement that we can do teaming up. And now I'm a car owner of his. And it's just really great to be in the sport.
And for being in the sport of football, you know, it's obviously a contact sport, but you know the safety factor that really comes into to that sport. And NASCAR over the last many years, you just talking about being a Dale Earnhardt fan, the safety factor that comes into this. How much have you learned and how much can you bring over from your career into NASCAR and really just take that safety portion of it and start not only talking with others that are into this sport, but the drivers and the fans and, you know, everybody that's involved into the sport, especially from your aspect of playing in the NFL?
Well, I think one of the biggest things you said there is really trying to explain the excitement of the sport. And I was telling someone the other day, I said, it is very similar to running out on a Sunday night football game or a Sunday football game to a stadium of 75,000 screaming fans, just yelling and screaming your name. Is that kind of excitement? You know, we were at the Monster Cup Series on Sunday in Fontana, and we're walking down the alley with the same alley onto the stage where the drivers were walking, and it was a tunnel. And fans were yelling and screaming, and it was just – I mean, I couldn't explain the feeling that's coming out there. And, you know, I think I heard you guys talking before I came on just about how much the other crew chief and the team, how much they matter, and it really is. You know, I think that people misunderstand that, yeah, you have the driver in the car, but so much of what happens is your team. And football is a team sport. So there are so many different similarities that I can keep going down the line, but – the all-state excitement is there.
And, Jesse, my last question for you before I let you get out of here. I know that your time is very limited with us. Just talk just a little bit about how this opportunity in NASCAR is going to be able to build your brand out there, working with Jesse out there, and also what you guys are looking to achieve in the sport this year, what your goal and aspirations are in the K&N Pro Series.
Well, first of all, we want Jesse to win. You know, we want to give him the resources and the tools to, you know, keep getting better and better. He's only been racing a couple of years, which is amazing compared to a lot of experienced drivers that's been doing it for a long time out there. But number two, you know, I grew up in Prince George's County, Maryland, in a predominantly black neighborhood. And I grew up watching NASCAR on TV, but we never had the opportunity to get exposed to the sport. My first time being exposed to the sport was in 2008. I believe I was 25 or 26 years old. I can almost guarantee if 11 or 12-year-old Sean Merriman got a chance to come to a NASCAR race, it would spark my interest to be in the sport early on. So as big and as great as the sport of NASCAR is, it can be even bigger. Just, you know, if some of these young kids or minority kids have an opportunity to just come and experience a race, you know, it's a great thing to be a part of.
Sean, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here tonight. If you, we're going to let you thank your sponsors, let everybody know how you can follow the team on your social media pages, Twitter, Facebook, and we'll let you get out of here again tonight, and good luck throughout the rest of the year in the NASCAR K&N Pro Series.
You got it. Thank you. And my driver is Jesse Iwuji. You can follow me at Sean Merriman and at Lifestyle Branded Company. And I want to thank the Patriots Motorsports Group.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Sean.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, Stephen, that was NFL great Sean Merriman. Talks like he knows a little bit about NASCAR now, don't he, bud?
Yeah, he does. I mean, that's really cool that, you know, you get a lot of – you never know who you're going to meet, especially athletes from other sports that know about the sport of NASCAR, or just got introduced even in the last couple of years and really took a hold of it and want to make the sport better, grow the sport, and do things like this, especially bringing in a driver into the sport that, as we were just talking about, you know, Jesse has been racing for the last couple of years, but not only that, he's also in the Navy and fights for our country at the same exact time. So, I mean, it's really a good opportunity to go out there and build the sport of NASCAR out there from the ground up, especially in that K&N Pro Series.
Exactly. And we want to give Sean another big shout out for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And coming up here in just a few minutes, Stephen, we've got Mike Wardell, Vice President of Marketing and Communication from Richmond International Speedway, going to talk about the new Virginia Racing collaboration stuff they got going on with some short tracks and stuff. Stephen, let's go ahead and take a little quick break. The number to call in is 215-383-3681, and we'll be right back shortly from Talladega, Alabama.
Walking down the street, a hand of mine, it don't keep them other guys. And that one eyes are looking at you. But it's alright, and that's okay. Who could blame them anyway? You're so pretty, and you ain't even got a clue.
This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The biggest party in NASCAR returns May 5th through 7th for the Geico 500. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.
Call from my other phone.
We're back live from Dega Nation. I'm Timmy Spain alongside SpeedwayDigest.com. Steven, I think you have our next guest.
Hey, Tim, I've got Mike Waddell on here from Richmond International Raceway to talk about the new Virginia collaboration with Virginia Racing up here. Mike, thanks for coming on here tonight.
Thank you a lot, Stephen. Good to see you, Tim. It's an honor to be on the show tonight.
Thank you very much, Mike. We appreciate having you.
Mike, first question I just want to really get into first is, you know, there's 25 tracks up here in Virginia, not only NASCAR sanctioned but non-NASCAR sanctioned between dirt, short tracks, drag racing. Talk just a little bit about how all of this came together in Richmond International and Martinsville Speedway kind of spearheading this out there with the National Series tracks that bring in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series into Virginia.
Well, sure thing. It's kind of like when we met and were talking back at Homestead back in November, you know, we were talking about the Commonwealth of Virginia and how these tracks, and if you include the karting tracks out there, the pro karting tracks, not where you go and hang out with your buddies after a tough day at work, but there are 27 racing facilities here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And wouldn't it be great if the sport could flourish at the grassroots level? That's going to rise up, and that's really where the thought came to be. Racing is the pro sport in the Commonwealth, and we felt like there was an opportunity here to tie everybody together, and that's what we've done with RacingVirginia.com, and we're looking forward to the launch coming up on Monday.
As you know, my home track right near me is Langley Speedway. Last year, unfortunately, they didn't race, but over their 65-year career, many champions came through there. Benny Parsons, Earnhardt, Ned Jarrett, and others have graced that track. Just as brand new track that opened last year, Dominion Speedway, you've got Shenandoah, we've got Lonesome Pine and others around this state here. When you start looking at these tracks here in Virginia, especially short tracks in general, what is the collaboration piece that can help them more specifically into overall building the sport up and getting fans into the stands and getting them to these events to really invigorate them to come to live events that will ultimately lead them to either there at Richmond or Martinsville?
Well, I really think it really has to do with communication. Right now, there's no tie that binds all of these facilities together. And you talk about great places like the Pine. I can't wait to get out there and talk to Anthony Freeman, who's one of my buddies that I've made over this, or get out to Motor Mile in Radford, or, you know, Winchester, or Virginia Motor Speedway in Jamaica, where Bill Sawyer, you know, the Sawyer family, so very important under the legendary NASCAR legend Paul Sawyer with Richmond and our history, but now doing it on the dirt out there in Jamaica, just about an hour from here. But I think it's that communication. It's the communication of getting people together just to let you know when the races are, to know that on Friday night it's Southside. I mean, that's a religion for the people here in the greater Richmond area. And then on Saturday nights, like you mentioned, not only do you have Dominion, but also Langley's back. I was at Dominion last week for the Cars Tour. We'll be at Langley this Saturday night for their opener before headed down to Martinsville to be a part of the SCP race coming up on Sunday. But, you know, RacingVirginia.com is not about NASCAR so much, even though we do have Joe Moore, the voice of Motor Racing Network and a Langley alum, as you mentioned earlier, writing for us every month. It's really about these short tracks and Capital City Speedway, Franklin County Speedway, King George. I mean, so many great opportunities, and then even on the drag strips. And don't forget, I mean, Virginia International Raceway down in Alton is really one of the premier road courses anywhere in the world. And we're so blessed to have so many different varieties of racing here, as you mentioned. The Commonwealth really embraces racing like no other state in the union.
And you just, as you just said, you know, we really only have here as a professional sport racing in the Commonwealth. And earlier today, by proclamation, the governor of Virginia named April Racing Month here in the Commonwealth. All of these states can, I mean, all of these short tracks can really get together and really be a benefit to this. Looking towards the future of not only what Racing Virginia is going to be able to do for them, talk just a little bit about how the future is going to go when it gets all of these tracks communicating together, working together, especially the non-NASCAR sanctioned tracks out there that are not going to be able, that have not been able to benefit from that collaboration, especially under a NASCAR banner before.
Well, I think the future is really undetermined, and that's one of the exciting things about it. I mean, Steve and Tim, when you look at this, trying to get everybody on the same page has really been a struggle, and it's been a common thing in all of our lives here at Richmond International Raceway over the last 5 months. People like Courtney Brockwell, our director of communications, Brent Gamble, and myself have done a lot of the heavy lifting on this, along with our web partner Sidearm, which is based out of Syracuse, New York. And trying to get all these folks to talk has been number one. Trying to get them all in the room, and we're going to try to do that at the end of 2017. We're going to try to bring all the venues together in Richmond and talk about the things that we all are looking to do. Get more people out to the tracks. Get more people involved in the sport, whether that's as a participant or if it's as an owner or as it's just a season ticket holder. But trying to keep that involvement at the grassroots level. And really one of the things that I'm most excited about, Tim, Stephen, is trying to get together our Team Racing Virginia. Now, we're going to try to come up with a little bit better title for it than that. But it's loosely based on the Coca-Cola Racing family, which I think is one of the greatest promotions in racing, and it's been going on for a number of years now. But what we're looking to do is a little bit different take. We want to make an association with as many drivers as possible for these short tracks, but we want to do it with drivers that are under the age of 18. And when you look at some of the young talent that we have here in the Commonwealth, Macy Causey, who has won several races around the Commonwealth, won championships, and is part of the NASCAR diversity program right now. She's 16. We have young Chase Burrow, who's going to make his debut in the truck realm coming up this weekend on the mud up at Virginia Motor Speedway. And so many other great ones, Timmy Tyrell. Minnie has done such a great job, and we're looking forward to seeing what he does here in 2017. But trying to tell the story through the eyes of these youngsters at a time when kids are maybe not predisposed to being involved with NASCAR like we were, guys. I mean, we grew up in an era, at least I did back in Hickory, North Carolina, where you worked on your car, you couldn't wait to get out and see if you could make some tweaks to your car to see if it go faster than your buddies down the road. It might not be the case now. So trying to attack that younger generation of fans, those potential fans for racing, no matter if it's motorcycle, car, you name it, road racing, so many different varieties. But trying to get them while they're young and to tell the story through their peers, we feel is a unique marketing outlet and one that we're looking forward to engaging as many people as possible. And if you're listening tonight and you have an idea, you know, send me an email at, where the guys can tell you my email later on. I don't want to try to explain it to you right now. But so many different ways that we can be involved. And really, I had a great talk with Mike Rose today at Virginia International Raceway. And we were talking about just ways that we can promote motorsports and different communication platforms. And we're very blessed that we have these at our disposal, but it's really the responsibility lay with us to try to get after that now and to make this more than just a fledgling operation. And it takes an entire Commonwealth, I think, to raise up a sport. And I think we can do that if we all look at it together.
And my final question to you about this is, it's kind of a twofold one, which you've kind of hit just a little bit on. In the modern era, and even Richmond and Martinsville and ISC as a whole has really seen this, and NASCAR has seen this, is that with the prevalence of social media, small short tracks have really been the hardest hit in this to get the people to coming into the racetrack. With Fans Choice TV, you know, some tracks have brought in where people are able to watch live racing every Friday or Saturday night under the NASCAR banner. However, you know, with social media really just, you know, laying kind of a little bit of a waste to short track racing where people just are not predisposed, as you said, to really go back out there and watch racing as much anymore. How are you going to gear towards those millennial groups out there that are your target market that you're trying to re-engage out there to get them to the live events? And secondly, as a follow-up to that, the short tracks out there, how do you broaden their market also so that these groups out there that aren't predisposed, especially to motorsports, how do you re-engage back to them and say, well, you know, short tracks don't only have short track racing. We can introduce something else to them, whether it be drifting out there, one-on-one
right.
drags, whatever, et cetera, on a Wednesday or Thursday night, just as an idea, just to throw out there as a side question to that.
Yeah, I think you look at facilities, and they're all different kinds of facilities. Like Southside's had the same crowd for a long time, and they're always going to be there, and it's a great racing crowd. Southside is pure racing. If you've been out to Midlothian, you know what I'm talking about. And then you have a new facility like Dominion, and what Steve Britt and Edwin Pardue and their crew has built up just outside of Fredericksburg. And there you have right now a road course. You have a half-mile oval, and soon they're looking to add in the future a drag strip up there. And that's a place with a lot like VIR, where you can do a variety of different things over the course of a weekend. I mean, just so many things going on. And in mid-May, there's some great activity going on at Virginia International Raceway. You ought to check it out at VIR.com. But I think when you go to these different places, there's something for everybody. You know, the experiences are different, but I love going to these different tracks. And I think with RacingVirginia.com, you have the opportunity with the master schedule page to check out anywhere across the Commonwealth, from the Blue Ridge Mountains out to the Chesapeake. You have the opportunity to check out where these races are going to be, what time they're going to be, where you can get the tickets, and how you can engage with the stories that will be told. I mean, we have Joe Moore, we have Randy Hallman. They'll be telling the stories, you know, of the Cup guys. At least Joe will focus in on that. And that's awesome because we have the top voice in NASCAR radio on our site. But also, Randy is a veteran journalist. He's going to tell the stories of the Linwood Burrows, who's our track director, of the Clay Earls down at Martinsville, of the Sawyer family, who has meant so much to racing, and the countless other people across this Commonwealth who have done so many dynamic things to help grow this sport. I mean, my favorite guy, and Tim, you'll know this name, and I know you do, Stephen. I mean, does it get any better than Tim Flock? I mean, there's a whole generation of people that might not know about Tim Flock. And it's our responsibility to tell those stories and to embrace those characters that made racing in America so great. But to have those types of connections right here in the Commonwealth, that's a rich legacy that we must preserve and that we must promote. And maybe that will inspire the next group. And whether you're doing that on a website, in person, or if you're doing that over some social media aspects, that there's some great stories out there. And I think when you tell those stories, Stephen, when you tell those stories, that's how, you know, great things can only explode with popularity. And I appreciate the opportunity tonight to come on and talk with you and Tim about RacingVirginia.com, and hope everybody will follow us on Twitter at Racing Virginia, and also go on first thing on Monday morning after the big STP race down at Martinsville, celebrating their 70th anniversary this year. Congratulations to Clay Campbell and his crew for what's going to be a great weekend coming up there in the southern part of Virginia.
Mike, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for coming on here tonight. Best of luck throughout the weekend. I know that you just said you're going to head out to a couple of different tracks this weekend. I will see you in Richmond at the end of April out there. And this is a great effort for collaboration in the Commonwealth of Virginia to get these tracks out there. But again, I do appreciate it. And before we let you go out here, I know we'll let your email slide, but let everybody know how they can follow you on social media.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Waddell, that's WADDELLRIRVP, Waddell RIRVP, and I look forward to engaging with a lot of you and having you here in Richmond again at the end of the month. We do have the big race weekend. Let me get a plug in. April 29th and 30th, we have the Toyota Racing Weekend here at Richmond International Raceway. The old fairgrounds will be hopping. We have some cool things going on. I mean, I don't know if there's a track anywhere in NASCAR that has as many cool things as we have going on. And when you set foot, Tim, I hope you can make it out too. But, Stephen, when you come in to the old fairgrounds here in Richmond on that weekend here at the end of April, you're going to see some things that you haven't seen here going back to maybe when we were a half-mile track. I'm going to leave it at that. We're going back to the future a little bit. We're going to tug at the heartstrings of people, and it's going to be 2017 will be a year to remember here in Richmond. We had some great racing last year. Our day race in the spring in 2016, rated by Jeff Gluck to be the number six race of the entire NASCAR season. And the first time in the history of the track, and that goes back a ways, that we had a last lap pass for a win. Pass. Now, you had Kyle winning when Daryl and Dale Sr. wrecked back in the 80s, but they wasn't a pass there. That was a wreck. This one was a pass last year when Kyle and Carl got together, so we're looking forward to another fantastic race on Sunday, April the 30th at 2 p.m. here at the Action Track.
Well, I tell you one thing before I let you get out of here. You guys are going to have Weezer up there playing the amphitheater. You may find me come up there and watch that too at the same time. I'm 40 minutes outside of Richmond. So if I come up there and watch Weezer, don't be surprised at that one either.
Well, I appreciate that. We are open. We did open up the Classic Amphitheater again. It's going strong with a new partnership with AEG. So, again, so much action going on here. And our tagline this year, so apropos, after 2,000 passes in that spring race last year, guys, we're calling it chaos at every corner. You catch your breath in the straightaways, but when you hit those corners, you never know where you're going to end up. And we look forward to seeing everybody out there. And you can follow us at RIR.com.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it. And like I said, I'll see you at the end of April. Take care.
Thank you, fellas. Y'all take care.
You too, Mike. Thank you. Mike Waddell there, Stephen. They got a lot going on up there at Richmond also. Stephen, we hadn't really talked about, I know we talked about, with Reverend Joe, we talked about the winners, but I want to bring up Clint Boyer. You know, there's been a little bit of media talk about Clint. He finished in the top five. This is his first top five finish since 2015, Stephen, since coming over to Stuart Haas Racing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he goes back 50-some-plus races without even a top 10. I mean, he's gone a long ways. You know, last year when he was over at H. Scott Motorsports, it really wasn't, you know, the best of his years at all. He struggled a lot over there.
Yeah, he did, really. And Stephen, if we can right quick, I want to play a little bit of Clint Boyer's interview in the media center there at Auto Club Speedway.
All right, we're now joined by the number 14 Rush Truck Center's Ford driver, Clint Boyer, finishing third today. You ran up front all day, and you were excited about this one you mentioned earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Talk about the run and being back here. Like
fun racetrack. You know, I mean, I remember, I think I've been coming here 12, 13 years now, and it wasn't always this way. You know, I remember single file around here, couldn't really pass, right, ring around the bottom, and now, I mean, all hell breaks loose on them restarts. You're, you know, trying to protect the bottom. They're calling you outside. You don't know if you're 3 wide, 4 wide, 12 wide. And it's all because of a really wide, cool racetrack, fast racetrack, and a lot of grooves. You know, 5 different grooves to race on all day long. It was just a lot of fun to be out there. Very challenging track, trying to balance those front tires, the rear tires, and, you know, and not push them off. You know, you can overdrive your car, and I did one run, and things fell away. And, you know, you learn from your mistakes and go on. But just to have the organization behind me, everybody at Stewart Haas Racing, my teammates, you know, to have these teammates like this is just, at this point in your career and everything that I've been through, it's, you know how fortunate you are when you get this opportunity. And, you know, Gene Haas and Tony Stewart getting out of the car and giving me this opportunity, I mean, just appreciative of everything.
Awesome. Thank you, Clint. All right, I'll open up with questions. Please state your name and affiliation. We'll start over here.
Kathy Brown, Pitting Outside the Box. Congratulations.
Thanks.
You have been getting better and better every week, and you can see it. And you can see it, you know, in your attitude that you are just happy with where you're at. When you finished third today, was there anything that Tony said to you when you got out of the car?
Good job. Tony wins a lot of races. He's won a lot of races. Anything less than a win is you know, he expects that. And I love that about Tony. As a, you know, obviously I know he's proud, and he was happy with that. But that's what you want in an owner, you know what I mean? Yeah, to have that instilled in everything in your DNA, I mean, it's that, like, just the way I was raised, anything else but a win is a bad day, you know, and you are miserable with anything less than that. I mean, it's just the way we're wired as race car drivers from the time we're 5 years old and on, you know. The problem is everybody else on that racetrack is wired the same way. So there's really only one guy happy, and everybody else is pissed off at the end of the day is what it boils down to. But to have an organization like that, to have owners like Tony Stewart and Gene Haas, I'm telling you, that's what it's all about. You know, the teammates, you say attitude, yes, I'm having a blast. You know, I'm getting a little long in the tooth here in this career, and to have this opportunity and the opportunity to go out and compete and win races, you know, and race for a championship, hopefully. I mean, that's what you're here to do, and I realize that these opportunities don't come around every day. Bob?
And, Stephen, that was Clint there in the media center out there. He brought up a really good point. You know, this was Auto Club Speedway's 20th anniversary year, and the track has changed a lot, a ton. You know, back in the day, like he said, you run the bottom, you stayed the bottom. Now the groove is spread out. You can run 3, 4, some maybe 5 wide. But I heard Sunday a lot of the drivers talking about that tar seam, Stephen. If you get on that tar seam, it wanted to make the ass end of the car pop out some.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as the track surface has continued to deteriorate over the years and kind of got very, very rough, it has produced better and better racing. It has produced a wider groove where we're seeing 3, 4, 5 wide racing out there in the turns, faster speeds, but the tires are also tearing out, causing the wear factor on that. So, you know, overall, you know, we really are seeing better racing out there, and I think that's good that we are seeing that, because it's now coming down to, you know, better racing overall at California Auto Club Speedway. You know, there's been, you know, that they're now considered one of the oldest services out there with their surface that is that laid, as well as Chicagoland is still on their original surface, and now at Atlanta Motor Speedway has decided today that they're not going to repave and they're going to reevaluate after 2018. So, you know, I think these older surfaces are really the drivers seem to like them better. It's opening up the grooves a whole lot more, and it's producing better and better racing, not only just for the current configuration of the cars, but it's actually producing better racing overall for no matter what is in the cars. And I think if you look back over 5, even 10 years ago, the racing each and every single year at Autocross Speedway has progressively gotten and continued to get better, and will only continue to see that as the surface continues to wear.
Yeah, I will agree, Stephen. Stephen, have you got the upcoming schedule brought up? I have not brought it up yet.
I did, yes.
Okay, let us know what all we got going on this weekend, bud, and we'll get out of here.
We're going to go to the smallest one of NASCAR's original racetracks in Martinsville, Virginia, the half-mile paperclip. Friday, 4:35 p.m., Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series qualifying out there. That's pretty much all the things going on there that day, except for a little bit of truck practice earlier in the day. Then on Saturday, we've got NASCAR Camping World Truck Series qualifying at 11:05 a.m. to be followed at 3 p.m. NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Alpha Energy 250 out there, 250 laps for them. And on Sunday, 2 p.m., 500 laps out there around the half-mile paperclip of a bull ring, beating and banging, chrome horns, tempers flaring, and the STP 500 from Martinsville Speedway in Southeast Virginia, or Southwest Virginia, sorry about that. should make for a fairly decent race out there this weekend. Anybody got a grudge? Anybody mad at somebody? Well, this is going to be the place that somebody's going to get back at somebody.
I'm not calling no names, though, Stephen. I'm not calling no names.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Just like you mentioned, this would be the weekend to make some payback if you wanted to pay back, correct?
That's right. They don't call it the half mile of mayhem for no reason at all.
They sure don't. Stephen, I want to thank you again for coming on with me every Tuesday night. We've been doing this now about 3 years, having a blast. Let everybody know if they can follow you on social media.
You can follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/Speedway Digest and SpeedwayDigest.com.
And we will be back. LAM and the boys, we said hello, Stephen, and we will be back next Tuesday night, live from Dagen Nation. I'm Tim Despain.
You will be back. I will be on a little bit of an extended vacation next week. You will be on a vacation the week after that. So there's always that.
Yes, I forgot about that. I'm going to let everybody know next Tuesday night, filling in for Stephen Wilson, my good friend Mr. Stan Creekmore is going to come on, and we'll let you know the guests then. And the week that I'm off, April 11th, Stephen Wilson is going to have Brett Holmes for Brett Holmes Racing, for a local guy right up the road from here in Mumford. So, Stephen, we'll go ahead and get out of here. Tell AM and the boys we said hello, and everybody, I will talk to you next Tuesday live from Dagen Nation. We'll see you. Until then. Never
station. I'm a technical star, I'm a Gibson guitar. Still a teenage kid trying to go too far. I'm a jukebox waiting in a neon bar for a quarter. I'm a child of a backseat freedom, baptized by rock and roll. Never let me grow in the garden of Eden. Never grow up and never grow old. The longer I live, the more I see it. There's only one way. I'm a child of a backseat freedom, baptized by rock and roll. Never let me grow in the garden of Eden. Never grow up, never grow old. No, another rebel in the great wide open.
This is power. This is freedom. This is tradition.
It's Dale Earnhardt with a lead.
This is being who you were meant to be, where you were meant to be. This is more than a race. This is Talladega. The biggest party in NASCAR returns May 5th through 7th for the Geico 500. Call 877-GO-TO-DEGA for tickets.